10 months after Roswell, there was another UFO crash in New Mexico. It happened near Aztec, located not far from Farmington, up in northern New Mexico. There were reports of dead ET bodies, wreckage from a craft hauled away by the U.S. Army during the dead of night, reports of extreme security. What really happened in March 1948, in what we now refer to as the Aztec crash? Our guests are the premier experts on the subject, Scott and Suzanne Ramsey. Welcome to the show, both of
you. Thank you for having us, Jerry.
Pleasure to be here.
It's always good to see you.
I'm here to support Scott. Scott's much more the expert. He's put in the miles on it, believe me.
Scott, first of all, I want to thank you for coming by to do the show with me. I mean, you've had some interesting experiences with radio interviewers. You married one, right?
That's correct, Jerry. Yep, she had me as a guest on her show and talking about the Aztec crash. And, well, that was the start of our relationship.
Suzanne, why don't you tell us a little bit about that radio show? What was it like? What did you do?
Oh, we covered all different types of topics. I really like to give people the opportunity to think for themselves, and I think if they're given a variety of information, we're smart enough that we can make some good decisions.
So Scott took you away from New Mexico and a radio career. Where do you live now?
North Carolina. My goodness, the elevation. We went from, let's see, I was at over a mile high, about 6,500 feet high, to about 1,200 or about 200 feet high, and, you know, humidity and everything else totally different.
We'll get to the subject of Aztec in a moment, but this is a people program, you know. We're interested in people, and here Scott comes to your radio station. He sits down in front of the microphone. You interview him. I guess it was love at first sight?
Not even close.
Yeah, I think I fell in love right off the bat.
That was the right answer, honey.
I was just curious, Jerry, how do you talk a beautiful young lady from moving from Farmington, New Mexico, that's well entrenched in Farmington with her own show and her own business, and how do you entice her to move almost 2,000 miles to North Carolina?
Well, Scott, you knew the answer, I guess. How do you?
I'll give him some good advice.
Scott, I think she's kidding you. I think she saw something in you right off the bat. Come on, Suzanne. Tell us the real scoop, huh?
Well, I'm going to be honest. As much as I enjoy roses, I think the thing, and this is going to sound kind of hammy, but bear with me, we are newlyweds, that for me, in interviewing him, I saw his integrity and his dedication, and it didn't matter so much the topic as it did to me the fact that he was just honest and really was looking for answers. And I had such respect for that, and it was so refreshing, I guess, that that was really the thing that pushed my buttons. So.
Okay, Scott. Suzanne said you're honest and sincere. I hear lots of things about Aztec that are not necessarily comprehensive.
Well, Aztec has a lot of black eyes, and I knew that going into it. I heard about the story on a business trip out there and came back to North Carolina and started to research a little bit. And the more I dug into it, it was very controversial. Frank Scully, of course, writing the first book on it, Behind the Flying Saucers, in 1950. 2 years later, the story basically cratered. It was devastated by another writer, J.P. Kahn, who did an article that Aztec was just a big hoax and that Frank Scully had been duped.
I think that Aztec had lost some of its momentum for many years, and one of the things that Scott, through his research, has unveiled and kind of gone down and rebrought it to a head. Farmington, though, I might add, had its own experience, and this was how many years later, honey?
Two years later.
2 years after the Aztec incident, there was what they call the Armada, and Scott would probably be able to give you in detail what happened. So they had a huge experience with UFOs. Tell them about the Armada.
Well, Jerry, about 2 years after Aztec, in March of 1950, the entire town of Farmington experienced what they call the Armada flyover, and it was hundreds of UFOs flew over the town of Farmington. It made front page, of course, in Farmington, and was seen throughout northern and northeastern New Mexico, witnessed by townspeople, firemen, state highway patrolmen, business leaders of the community, and it was quite an
Scott
episode.
Scott and Suzanne, it seems to me that New Mexico has been the center of UFO crash activity. I mean, especially back in those days.
Well, I can't speak on the other crashes. I'm very focused on just Aztec. New Mexico was then and still is now a hotbed of UFO activity, and I don't have the answer to it. I have a lot of speculation. Was it because of all the military activity, the development of radar, the detonation of the first atomic weapons, the storage of atomic weapons, the manufacturing of atomic weapons, highly advanced radar being prototyped out in that area? I don't know. I don't know if any of that has a connection, but, you know, as we put it all on the table and look at it, they sure had their own involvement of a lot of activity.
This flyover by the UFOs, probably over 100 of them at least, according to newspapers, that's very interesting.
Well, the Armada happened, it was St. Patrick's Day of 1950, I believe it was.
Wow, 3 years after Roswell and a couple of years before the Washington, D.C.
I have only reports from what I've read for the old archive newspapers that it was simply a flyover.
But they did have, wasn't there a red? Isn't there one that seemed to be different?
Yeah, there seemed to be a lead UFO that was a very brilliant, almost molten red in color that was quite larger. And then, depending on the reports you read from that time, it could be up to hundreds of UFOs behind it.
Back to the Aztec crash itself, there seems to be some question about exactly where near Aztec this crash occurred.
Well, it's funny. Suzanne and I were just going over some maps the other day. We stopped at a map store and looked at some USGS maps. And to answer your question, the crash site today is about 11.5 to 12.5 miles outside of Aztec to the northeast. And first time it's ever dawned on me in 8.5 years, it's really not in Aztec. It's either Mount Nebo or Turley, New Mexico, according to the USGS maps. It's sort of like a Roswell case. The alleged crashes in Roswell never happened in Roswell. They happened in Corona and the plains of San Augustine, Aztec being the major town that's closest to the alleged site.
Well, Suzanne, Farmington's not that far from Aztec.
They're about 10 miles apart. And nowadays, it's almost a solid
businesses
and homes in between.
Are there any eyewitnesses? Have you found any eyewitnesses to Aztec?
Allegedly, any of the witnesses that we've put in the credible category that Suzanne and I have talked to over the years never saw the actual recovery of how it was taken out. Two of the people we've interviewed claim to have seen two bodies through the portholes of the craft. If you look at other reports of other people over the years...
I understand this Aztec crash, they had a lot of ETs on board.
Well, up to 16 occupants, yeah. That story, 14 to 16 seems to remain consistent. Unfortunately, I try to base my talks that I give based on eyewitnesses we talk to, and they had been run off as soon as the military arrived. They were talked to and chased away. So we have never talked to a witness that was there as the recovery took place.
You know, you got to pat the military on the back. They seem to be able to keep these witnesses quiet. They just don't talk.
Well, Ken Farley talked to us back in the late 90s or 2000. He was dying at the time. We interviewed him in Phoenix, or actually right outside of Phoenix, Arizona. We interviewed him. Randy Barnes and I flew down to Phoenix, and he was on oxygen and knew he didn't have much time left. And he told us the military was very abrupt. A lot of people early in the years talk about the Air Force recovery. I don't think it was Air Force, but they were threatened with their lives that it was...
Well, that's a good witness. How did you come across him?
Yeah, and he wanted to talk for years, and we kept getting hints that Ken wanted to talk. And when we were finally contacted by a friend of his that Ken was ready to talk, we didn't waste any time. We grabbed airline tickets and rental car reservations, and we got to Phoenix in a pretty big hurry. Ken Farley's story was he was in Durango visiting an aunt en route down to a little town called Cedar Hill.
That must be close to the crash.
Right. Durango's just, 20, 30 miles north of the crash site. Highway 44 in the old days ran from basically Albuquerque up through the Four Corners area and then went straight north into Durango. Today that highway is referred to as Highway 550. Of course, Ken hadn't been back to the area in a long time, so he's referring to it in our interview as Highway 44. And his story was he was coming down from Durango to meet a friend of his who was going to be dropped off in Cedar Hill, just north of Aztec, and the two were going to continue to San Diego. And upon his arrival in Cedar Hill to meet his friend, and Cedar Hill, depending on where you are, it's an elevation higher than Aztec, his friend claimed a lot of activity going out what we call, you know, Heart Canyon Road. And the two, being young in their late teens, early 20s, decided to see what all the commotion was about and got out to the crash site. Now, they're not residents, so they don't know anybody. They don't know the police officers. They don't know the oil field workers. They don't know the ranchers. But they got out there, and Ken claims to have seen this disc approximately 100 feet in diameter, extremely large disc, laying on the mesa.
He also did go closer to it, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Ken and his friend, you know, trying to condense this into a 20-minute interview, but they climbed up on the craft.
Climbed up on the craft?
Oh, absolutely. The craft, according to everybody, and this is one story that remains consistent, is the craft was virtually intact. If there was any damage, it was on the underneath that they couldn't see.
In other words, the ETs were still inside the craft, not outside.
No, not with the witnesses we've talked to. They claimed through the portholes you could see two bodies slumped over control panel, for the lack of a better word. And they were not your stereotypical large-eyed almond entities. They were, as Ken says, you know, and you know, this is 50-some years later, 50 years later, small in appearance, 3, 3.5, 4 feet, but oriental in appearance from the one face he could see. Well, actually, it's hard to tell whether they're grays or what, because the bodies, and again, this story remains consistent over the years, they looked as though they had been burnt. They were a brownish or burnt color.
So, Scott, you're saying it was a violent crash, whether caused by the radar we were using at the time or
something
else? I've looked
into that theory. I spent a lot of time on the radar bases. I have not drawn any conclusions on that. Jerry, I've just tried to do the whole research based on documentation and eyewitness interviews. There's been a lot of other things that have come out about that. Radar, obviously, it could be one. Could they have just crashed due to a problem? That's another. Were they shot down?
No thunderstorm connected with this crash, right?
And now, there was a bad brush fire that drew the oil field workers out there that early morning. It's the only reason that the oil field workers got called out to the site. Doug Nolan, one of the El Paso oil field workers, arrived at his boss's house, Bill Ferguson, and Bill Ferguson told Doug that they're going to Blanco or somewhere. We're going out to Heart Canyon. There's a brush fire near the drip tanks, and El Paso had some large drip tanks at the base of the mesa. It had nothing to do with the crash, according to everybody we've interviewed. Probably a lightning strike that night. They said the fire had no way involved any fear for where the drip tanks were.
Scott and Suzanne Ramsey are our guests. We're talking about the Aztec crash. We'll be back with this exciting story. But first, let's pause for this word. Why visit the Grand Canyon in Arizona? Marv Mason knows why.
Mainly because the Grand Canyon is known as one of the seven natural wonders of the world.
No one gives a more personalized tour or knows more about the Grand Canyon than Marvelous Marv.
My main thing is education on the geology, because the Grand Canyon is a life record. It shows us where we were at one time on the planet with the continental drift and all the layers that were laid down by sediments, and then how the canyon was carved. And, of course, the views, you know, a picture doesn't do it justice. But it's nice to have somebody there tell you about it that's lived there.
It's the best way to tour the Grand Canyon. Marv picks you up in a modern van at your hotel in the Grand Canyon area and takes you on a day-long tour. Contact Marvelous Marv Vacation Tours. Call and talk to him personally. 928-707-0291. Or visit his website.
MarvelousMarv.com. Real easy, real easy.
Welcome back to our show on Aztec. Scott and Suzanne Ramsey are our guests. And we're talking about the Aztec crash that happened in 1948. When we went to the break, we were talking about the crash in detail and some of your witnesses. Did anyone describe what the vehicle looked like, the UFO?
Interviewing Ken Farley when we did, he said obviously it was seamless. It looked like a brushed or polished pewter. Again, he didn't know Doug Nolan. We didn't interview Doug Nolan until about a year and a half ago. And Doug told the same story. They even described it was so perfect it looked like it had been molded.
Do we have a time for this UFO crash? Night or morning? Or?
No, we've never been able to put a thumbnail on that. It was no more than hours because we know almost for sure that the craft was tracked by a Cuba police officer outside the town of Cuba. Cuba, New Mexico, if you take your finger and follow it out of Aztec, southeast, going back toward Albuquerque, I would say it's 80, 90 miles away from that town. It's between Albuquerque and the Four Corners area. It's about the largest community you'll go through.
So you have a police officer as a witness?
Unfortunately, he passed away before we got to him, but talking to his friends, he allegedly tracked it that night. There had been a lot of sightings in the Four Corners area and Cuba prior to the night of the 25th or morning hours of the 25th, and he allegedly tracked it by vehicle, losing it several times and picking it up again north of Aztec, where he followed it out Park Canyon Road.
Sounds to me like this is a good witness, don't you think?
Jerry, that's tough. I don't know. I've racked my brain on that a lot. Manuel never really went into great detail to his friends prior to his death. I missed interviewing him by a number of years. All reports say it seemed to be in some kind of distress, fluttering back and forth, flying low and very slow. Obviously, back then, for him to track it and losing it several times, but... it's hard to piece that part of the story together.
I mean, it seems to me that this is authoritative, at least. A police officer, wasn't there a second police officer?
The authorities. That story remains pretty consistent, too. Late morning, early afternoon, when the second police officer showed up at the scene, he informed everybody to clear out and get out because the military had already been notified that this craft was laying on the mesa. Got other reports through the years, secondhand reports saying the military showed up in the air and not on foot, but believe it or not, through helicopters, which had been recently introduced into the military. Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, Doug Nolan said... in our interview, he didn't know what amazed him more, seeing a disc laying on the mesa or the helicopters. And that really fits into the timeline. And, it's consistent. It's incredibly hard after...
Yeah, a long time, 60 years.
...try to put a smoking gun to it.
Well, I think one thing that might be important to know, too, is that... Do you want to describe to them about it opening up?
Yeah,
how that got open.
I've heard through the years of how they entered the craft, and it wasn't until we got a hold of Doug Nolan prior to his death, he talked about they were able to. I guess Bill Ferguson, his boss, showed up with some kind of rod, poker rod, fire rod, something they used in the oil fields back then, and the craft. About the only damage that Doug recalled was a broken porthole, which you keep hearing year after year. I mean, the old story going back. Yeah, the porthole already had some form of damage. Ferguson got a poker rod or some kind of rod, and they were able to poke through the porthole. And I said to Doug, "What would make you do that?" You know, and Doug said, "You know, 19-year-old kid, we not knowing what it was." Yeah, I know I would. I know I would. It doesn't sound normal, but it would probably be. And their thing was, is anybody injured or is there any survivors? And by poking around, Doug said they were able to access the craft, a trap door.
Kind of like in the movies, you know, you poke around and the door opens.
Yes, that's exactly right. Now, they didn't. The two fellows that Scott has interviewed did not go inside. I think that their braveness ended there.
Other oil field workers allegedly, according to the witnesses.
So there were a group of people around.
We count 19, and 19 people that we've been able to, ranchers, two police officers, brave themselves to take a peek inside, and I think that's where the stories have filtered down that there was, you know, 14 and then two upstairs, so as many as 16. Yeah, we just had an incident where a rancher that was very concerned with the story of Aztec because he claimed he owned the land out there back in 48. And, yeah, he's getting up in years. And Suzanne and I just pulled the real estate records, and I don't doubt his concern, but I think at his age, the difference of 48 to 49 to 50 to 53 is a blur to him because we pulled the deeds on the land, and he certainly does own land and did own land out there, but he didn't purchase it till 1953. Right. He, you know, everybody has a little bit of time dementia. I know I do with all our traveling, so...
That's exactly it. But one of the things that I think is so time-consuming and why it's taken Scott so much time through this research is to document and to know, is what they're saying accurate, and do we have something to back it up? And that's where it's excruciating in time.
We have all the documents up in our room, all the deed transfers going back from 36 to 53, which, you know, tell the story of who owned the land and when it was transacted and when it was deeded.
Scott, I wonder how long it took the recovery operation by the Army. I think you agree with me, it's the Army.
Well, the story goes, according to our witnesses, that it took whatever transpired in there as far as a recovery took about 2 weeks.
Well, it was big enough to hold 18, 16, 15 ETs, a crew of 15. That's a pretty big ship.
No, Jerry, that's one of the problems I have. You know, it was a 100-foot diameter disc, you know, depending on the reports, up to 18 feet tall. I think Bill Steinman's research back in the late 80s was the most accurate on size. And that's one of the problems I have. How do you take something that size and move it? There was reports that they were able to take it apart, that it came apart in pieces, and I've never talked to a witness that could substantiate that because my witnesses were all gone by the time that part would come in. But, that for the critics, that certainly, or the skeptics, that certainly one bullet in their cylinder is how do you get it out of here?
I haven't been out there. Is it desert or mountains? Or?
Yeah, a little bit of both. Hart Canyon Road is unimproved road to this day. The craft sits up on top of a mesa, which is commonly referred to as the Arkansas Loop or the Arkansas Bend, and that's where Hart Canyon Road takes a left-hand turn, circles up, and heads towards the Colorado border.
I was just going to say, and the elevation is about 6,500 feet there, so that gives you kind of an idea.
Well, I've certainly tried over the years to find something, a bomber or an experimental aircraft that crashed. Something obviously impacted the top of the mesa. There's so much military activity going on, but, yeah, we've looked at crash reports or incidents, as the military likes to call them. We've looked at civilian incidents, and certainly with all that air activity out there north of Farmington, you had a bomber crash. East of Bloomfield, there was, you know, a fighter crash. But there's nothing in that exact area that we've been able to uncover. After the helicopter showed up, we have one person who we never got to interview claimed that as the helicopters came down to circle the area that there were fighter aircraft, and back then it would probably be a P-80, the old Pursuit 80, or later became the F-80 aircraft. He claimed to other people that there were fighter planes in the area. But we had two deathbed confessions. We had another gentleman came forward that said he worked on the cleanup after the craft was removed. He didn't even know it was a UFO crash or a UFO landing. To him, it was a cleanup that they had to perform. And Unfortunately, Jerry, you know, with the age group of everybody, it seems like we get to a witness and a few years later they're deceased, or in some cases a few months later they're deceased.
I know they made a documentary on that, and you were in it.
A little bit. I was interviewed for the documentary, and I traveled with the crew for a number of days. And subsequently they came to our home in Mooresville, North Carolina, and did some interviews with Suzanne and myself. And they did a really nice job putting it together. They've got Stanton Friedman, Nick Redfern, Rich Dolan, Carl Flock to show the opposing side of the Aztec story.
What does Stanton think about Aztec?
Well, I think when I first talked to Stanton, he was a little standoffish and a little skeptical, which it was smart, because, again, Aztec's got a black eye. But I think Stanton's seen enough now that he's opened his eyes. I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but he's given me a lot of encouragement. He's been a dear friend to Suzanne and I, and tried to keep me on the straight and narrow on where I look and how I qualify and quantify some documents and witnesses. Our jobs jointly are not to convince people it happened or not. It's to go out and gather as much facts as we can historically to put in front of people and say, was this a hoax or was it a cover-up?
You know, one of the unique things about the Aztec story is that the public library there in Aztec is involved in this. It's a fundraiser for them to get a new building, right,
well,
Suzanne?
They have an ingenious young lady who is Leanne Hathcock, and she is the head librarian, the director of the library there. And a few years back, she knew they desperately needed a new library. And it's very small, lots of services and programs that they offer, but unfortunately, they just have outgrown it and by heaps and bounds. And she felt like there was going to be a need for the future of a new library, and she needed to do some fundraising, and she wondered, what was it that made Aztec unique? What did it have to offer that no place else does? And she went into the history and found out about the Aztec crash. And she felt like, wouldn't that be interesting to bring people to this area, do a symposium, and draw them to, you know, get involved and be interested in, you know, this topic.
Scott and Suzanne, I take it you guys have no doubt that Aztec happened.
Jerry, I've looked at that. If somebody's pulled the wool over my eyes over the years, and of course we have some interesting declassified documents, obviously it's no smoking gun to Aztec. But if anybody's pulled the wool over our eyes, we've had a bunch of retired people that haven't seen each other in 10, 20, 40, 50 years whose stories still to this day stick together, and I think that would be a pretty tough task.
Suzanne, you're from there, or at least you lived there for a while. Had any UFO experiences yourself?
I lived there, I'm going to guess just right off the top of my head, about 12 years. And I have never had an experience myself, and I had heard bits and pieces about Aztec, but I have heard from public officials, people that are involved in politics, to all walks of life, people that have had experiences out there, and people that I really consider credible people.
Governor Richardson seems to be pretty active.
No, he really seems very proactive in getting information out.
Actually, the Air Force has been very cooperative because everything I write, which isn't published yet, but I'm very pro-Air Force and very patriotic. I fully understand why, if something like that happened in 48, they would have covered it up.
Good way to end the show, Scott and Suzanne.
One of many.
Thanks, sir, for a great show and a lot of information on Aztec.
Thank
sure.
you, Jerry. We appreciate
a pleasure.
It.
This has been a look at Aztec with Suzanne and Scott Ramsey. Our producer has been Jane Squirtley, our own location producer, Roberta Scott. Until next time. This is Jerry Pippin thanking you for listening. Cheers.
Hi, this is Rod C. Davis. I have a question. Do you love to travel? Then you need to check out YTV's weekly travel deals and steals. Just go to the Travel Store and More banner, click on the Business and Vacation Travel link, and then sign up for the Deals and Steals newsletter for great deals every week to America's favorite vacation spots. And while you're logged on, you can send flowers to that special person, buy your perfect car, buy tickets to attractions, book an exotic hunting or fishing trip, set up a honeymoon registry, and much more. Just click on the extras link and take advantage of YTB's huge purchasing power that saves you money. And if you'd like to save a lot of money on your travel, then check out the Travel Business Opportunity link and find out how you could earn a commission each and every time that you book a trip. You can be sure that Travelocity, Orbitz, and Expedia won't do that.
Bookmark the page and save it to your PC. You can make money and save money at the same time.